But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome back to The Advice Show. This week we're on site at Gleneagles. I'm joined by Jenny and Nicola Ellis from Wellington Wealth. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Hello and welcome. Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
Had a good day
it's been
today.
Really good day. Yeah. Yeah.
Any sessions in
busy,
particular?
Busy but always worthwhile.
Any sessions in particular that have particularly piqued your interest?
I mean, I just was in emerging markets or strategic bond fund there, and that was interesting. But every single one has been really great. I've enjoyed everyone, and the day's gone really fast.
Yeah. And how about you, Nicola?
Yeah, same with me. Kind of a US theme for the ones today, but that's quite good, quite topical. But no, really, really useful.
How does it work after these sort of events as sort of colleagues and sisters? Do you sit in the car on the way back and discuss the funds that you're going to select moving forward?
We do when we get back to the office. Maybe
yeah.
not.
Yeah, maybe not
we'll
the
let
car.
The weekend yeah, settle yeah. in, and then we get the presentations back out. And often we meet the fund managers. Quite a few of them come to the office, or and we sort of follow up with them there. So
yeah, and do an analysis of where we are currently, and just looking at the new funds that we've been introduced to, or you know, some we are familiar with already. But we do an analysis and then follow up further, or just put it on the watch list or something.
Yeah, some more due diligence. What's the investment committee like at Wellington Wealth? Is it you two and then a few others as well? Or?
Yeah, we have both. We have Aspen on our panel. So Aspen are our sort of MPS provider. But what we find is we can never get the same investment strategy across every provider. And that's really, I suppose, a big problem. We'd like to have one that fits all, but it never works like that. So we have some policies that we need to look at individually as well. So we have to always keep our hand in, and of course we've got to make sure that Aspen are on their toes and look at their performance as well. And so Nicola and I are mainly doing that on a quarterly basis. So,
and can we go back to the beginning then? You two, as many of our listeners will know, are sisters and colleagues. Sort of, what's it like working together? What's the sort of ethos of the business? And probably been asked that thousands of times.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Well, do you know, I think everyone wants the gossip that it's an absolute nightmare and we argue all the time.
No, but actually,
we don't.
I
know, it's
not the gossip like Oasis, you know, there's no big feuds or anything like that.
Are you going to go on a money spinning global tour and charge people twice the amount of money that they should have been charged?
No, but I am going to the tour. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Yeah. I'm going twice.
Oh, nice. Yeah. But no, we've been set up 9 years ago, and I think what works really well for us is the structure. So when we started, I'm more the sort of a client-facing side, so I'm the advisor, and Jenny's more the systems, compliance and back office. So that, for us, when we started, worked really, really well, just so that we could both focus on the areas of our areas of expertise. So I think having that split and division and that sort of implicit trust that you know each other's got each other's back, and you know you can trust each other to do each part separately.
I think most companies start with two advisors, so to have separate focuses on the business helped, I think, drive us forward quite quickly, because when you've got two advisors, they are both advising clients, but then they have to give up some of that client-facing time to actually run a business and make decisions. So it was quite well structured that Nicola could just focus on clients and I could make the decisions in the background and do the work there. So, and because we think quite alike, sometimes we dress alike, sometimes people say we sound alike, but we don't think so. But I think, you know, we're on the same wavelength. So that made it easier when it came to decisions, and we would run it past each other, obviously, but we were probably quicker at making decisions than maybe others.
And working to the same goals and same values that we share. So it's a good synergy to have. Sometimes a team actually dread us going away because we come back with so many ideas that we've already, you know, thought through, and so they kind of feel a bit, what are we doing next? But we certainly enjoy working together.
Do you feel it gives you sort of different perspective on sort of financial planning and the business as a whole working together as a sort of two people that have known each other since the beginning of time, really?
Yeah.
I suppose a lot of values and a lot of our upbringing we apply, and probably part of why we got into it, because our dad was a financial planner.
Yeah.
Not his first career, he almost had, that was his third career, third iteration. But I think we've always been used to working together. When my mum, we grew up in a hotel as a family business. So we're, you know, from, I don't know, age of six, five, I was, you know, in helping out as was Jenny and my other sister. So we've always been used to working together, always intended to go into business together. Yeah. We probably didn't know exactly what that would be, but actually financial planning's worked well for both of us.
Who was first to, sorry, Jenny, to
come I was going to say that, we don't think we could work with our older sister. She's in the army, so she's a wee bit bossy.
But. Tough taskmaster, yeah.
If she's listening, sorry, Jenny.
It's...
Who was sort of first to say from an early age, I'm interested in financial services, or following your dad into...
Probably me. So I studied economics at uni. It was initially investment was, you know, where my interest certainly lay, the route I wanted to go down, the sort of analyst and ultimately fund management. But then I had a sort of insight into more the financial planning and the more client facing side, that actually I'm very much a people person, and actually that it's a much more satisfying job. I mean, I absolutely love my job, and I love finding out about people, and they are quite vulnerable. They're telling you lots of information, personal information, and really drilling down to their goals and objectives. So to be their trusted advisors, you know, quite an honour, and it's a pleasure. We've got some lovely, lovely clients, so it's a real pleasure to do what we do. But yeah, I was probably first into the profession, if you like.
And I was a totally different career. I did topographic science at university, so I was map maker, and I ended up getting a job offshore as a hydrographic surveyor, mapping where the oil pipelines were. But of course, that's a very strict procedure driven environment offshore, and safety and also just collecting data. So data is probably the commonality that I bring, tech and data, because I didn't realize how much technology I'd used in my career, because you just do it as part of your job. You don't realize when you go into a different industry how you've been, because I also did a master's in computer graphics and 2D and 3D motion graphics and virtual prototyping at Glasgow School of Art. So it stood me in good stead, believe it or not, these very different environments and careers. When I just came in to cover 4 weeks holiday leave for one of my dad's members of his team, I just said, Dad, you're in the dark ages here. You need to up your game in technology. So it's probably just as you'd finished university. So I was more on the financial tech side, if you like. So again, we've just come from it from different places and had different strengths, which is good to pull together.
Yeah.
So. How do you tally those sort of the personable side with the wanting to be at the forefront of sort of technology? Because obviously now, I mean, lots of the talk at the moment is about artificial intelligence, what tech can do for firms to bring on new clients, what tech can do for clients. How do you guys transpose that,
together? So we've got GI in the business, Jenny Intelligence. So that's very much Jenny's bag.
Sam Altman will be coming to buy Jenny.
I think, I mean, although I'm the older sister, I have certainly got more of an interest in it. And, you know, as a small business, we've got to be wary, because cybersecurity is our utmost importance. And, you know, we do look as a privilege looking after client finances, and we'd never want anything to jeopardise that. So certainly on the client side, we're maybe a wee bit slower on uptake of AI, but certainly it can be used in other areas of the business. So wherever we have a problem or a productivity blockage, or, you know, we try to look at other ways to do it, and certainly AI comes into the mix. And I mean, it's ultra exciting. I think what it can do is incredible. So using it is a no-brainer, but as I say, it's got to be done in a responsible way, especially when you're just a smaller firm. Some of the bigger firms might go straight into client data. And you know, that we will eventually, I'm sure, because it's affecting every part of every industry.
M&S situation, do you?
So we're cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago now, and the Lloyd's head of AI was saying that 80% of their workforce will be artificial intelligence but in 5 years' time, which was a bit scary. It made me feel it's a bit sort of through the looking glass, isn't
it? Yeah, you still are going to have humans there in the loop. So it is, you know, like expanding your team. So potentially we could work with more clients, and you know, the sort of service that we deliver to our clients, we could potentially deliver to more people. And when there's an advice gap, that's actually quite exciting, because it means more people have access to financial planning and financial advice, which is quite important to bring the whole nation up in their knowledge. So we
don't see it as a threat so much. It's more excited than just it's how you use it and apply it, rather than it replacing us, because it's a people industry, it's service industry.
Absolutely,
it's people,
definitely
a people business.
When I was preparing for this, something that struck me, I watched you guys both speak in January on a panel with my colleague, or maybe it was just you, Jenny.
No, it was both of us.
And the talk was sort of around how you do client meetings, and I was struck by sort of the office layout and how you guys are going to get people into the office and how you want to make them feel when they're in the office. Can you sort of explain that a bit?
So this was our lockdown project, actually. So picture the scene in March 2020 when we went into lockdown, and we were just about to complete on our first business property purchase, when everyone's talking about giving up an office. And at that point, we were still 6 members of staff, 2 are part-time, and we were purchasing an office, which I don't even know the square foot, but pretty big compared to what we needed.
3,500 square
feet. So a pretty big office space.
This is in Glasgow,
city centre. So of course, everyone's saying, oh, you can give up the office and cost saving for business and everything will be on Teams and Zoom. And we went, oh.
I know, we had a momentary flicker as, are we doing the right thing? But then, I mean, both of us, I think it might have been because we grew up in a hotel. You know, we also come from a big family. So speaking to people, being with people is something that's really important to us and natural. And we thought, no, we definitely want people in. You know, we want to host some client events. We want a lovely environment for the team to work. And that was before, you know, thinking about people coming back to the office. It was just that we thought, you spend so much time at work, you want a nice place to be and work. So we looked at it as a longer term investment, really, for, you know, 10, 20 years, rather than just looking at the short term. And that's why we sort of started developing the concept.
Yeah, so it was, if the financial planning studio was created, and it's really, you know, as Jenny said, for the team, but also for clients, it's quite nerve-wracking talking about finances, sometimes when you have your initial meeting to a complete stranger.
It's the stuff around that, isn't it?
Yeah,
family and stuff you've got to pay for.
Totally. So you want people to feel comfortable. You don't want that traditional office look with a horrible lighting. You know, you want an environment for people to come in and feel relaxed. And it is actually quite disarming when, you know, no matter if somebody has been 18 or 80, when they've come into our office, they've said, oh, I could live here. You know, they really are, they like that environment. So they initially just, you know, relax. And it certainly has been one of the best decisions we've made as a business, I think, because it's just been a really lovely space. And even the team, you know, it's a really nice space. We all sit together. It's open plan, which is really good for that interaction. And yeah, I think, as Jenny said, the client events that we've hosted, more just for our existing clients, a social event, just it works really well for that too. So it's so we've got lots of ideas of what to do next with it. That will be coming soon.
Yeah. Well, we called it a studio because we wanted to do more video content. We wanted it to be the most Instagrammable office in, you know, financial services, because we want to attract a young audience. We want to get them to get engaged with their finances, especially when people, influencers or TikTokers, you know, they can make a lot of money really quickly, and it might be short-lived, but they really need to do some financial planning, and they really need to start thinking about what happens when this wave, you know, has gone. So I think it's important to try and bring a new dynamic to financial planning, and, you know, we want to change the image of the financial planning. We want to make it more colourful. We want to make it visual, and it's difficult to do that. We tried doing a lot of social media stories before that, but it's hard to come up with visuals. So having a nice office that you can photograph and things is really important to get good content.
Yeah, and just sort of on your clients and your service, I suppose. So you have the dream service, the plan service, and the enjoy service. Just in the context of the sort of clients you have, could you explain that a little bit to me?
So that's really the sort of client journey. So I would say our target market really are the plan element. So that's
what,
those
sort of age?
Sort of late 40s, 50s. So the ones that are really engaged with their finances, they're beginning to, you know, really think about the next sort of 10 years, what that next chapter might start looking like, what do they need to save more, have they saved enough, are they going to have enough? So that's probably our biggest target market, I would say. But from that, obviously, you've got those that are into retirement, and that's where it's the enjoy service comes in. So that next chapter, and just helping them maintain that sort of income strategy and
enjoy the fruits of their labour, really. Because it used to be the case where you'd collect assets under management, but nowadays we actually end up trying to get clients to spend more and do more things in retirement. Because you see the path, and you see that at some point health problems come in. So keep, you know, and your health is your wealth.
Or the
so keeping healthy,
to change or the government,
well, that too, exactly.
But it's important that people enjoy themselves and enjoy their money. You know, they've worked hard for it.
Yeah, which they've worked hard for. Yeah,
exactly.
And I suppose off the back of that, the dreamers are also important, because quite often we have children or grandchildren of existing clients, and it's just to try and service them effectively. I mean, we know at some point the cascading of the wealth will come down the generations, so you want to kind of engage them in a way that we can, but I mean, it's been quite a difficult challenge for a lot of advisors to do that, but we're hoping to harness technology and have an offering in that space that makes it more efficient.
And there are any sort of clients in particular that you target, whether it be sort of creative types or financial services professionals?
We say nice people.
Okay.
And I know that's really cheesy, but it is. I mean, we're potentially working with these people for the next 20, 30,
and their families.
You need to have that synergy. But in terms of background, you know, professionals,
entrepreneurs, we've got quite a lot of sort of engineers, doctors, you know, it's professional people.
I suppose with your hotel background, you met lots of different types of people, and that carries on.
Exactly,
to today,
exactly.
Right?
And I think that's one thing we are good at, is being able to, you know, relate to a lot of people. And again, big family as well, you know, we've got a really diverse mix of what people do in the family. So it's just, we can relate to people.
It's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're interested in people. You know, it doesn't matter the background or the career path, but, you know, being interested in someone and their journey is quite important, and going on that with them as well to try and achieve their goals.
And they want to feel valued as well within that structure, don't they? And you mentioned client events. Do you often try and get all of your clients in together, or do you do sort of subsets?
Well, we've done a few over the years, just more not with any, we call them client care events, but it's literally just to say thanks to the clients. And so over the years, we started with a small event, which just maybe 10 people in total. And we called it Crafternoon Tea. We made Christmas decorations and ate afternoon
glorious,
tea and
yeah.
drank champagne, and it was you know.
I trust this was in December, not
it was. Yeah.
What we find with some of these events is that people relax a wee bit more, and you find out more about them, and you know, even I suppose some of their dreams and aspirations and goals come out a bit better when they're relaxed, and especially having that sort of disarming environment. It's not something that every advisor could have done at afternoon tea, because it is a mostly male-dominated industry. So, and I'm not saying that, you know, males can't host an afternoon tea. Of course they can, but it was something that we were interested in. We like to try and bring fun to our work and do things that we enjoy. And if other people do as well, then that's great, and it creates a good environment for an event. The second one we had was, it was like, I suppose, an antiques roadshow type event. It was, we invited along some local auctioneers at Lion and Turnbull, and they brought five items that people could try and
guess. It sounds like a lot of fun.
I mean, some of them were quite expensive items, but the clients could also bring an item to be valued. So it was really interesting and a really good mix of items, and clients enjoyed it. We hosted that one. This is before we got our studio, so it was at the Glasgow Art Club, which is steeped in history and has Charles Rennie Mackintosh friezes and stuff. So it was a nice place to host an event. So the last one we had...
Yeah, we had Hamza Yassin, who, depending what you're into, you'll know him. So he is a wildlife photographer. But if you're a Strictly fan, he was also... He won Strictly a couple of years ago. So we thought it was a good broad...
Are you guys wildlife photography fans or Strictly fans?
Oh, yeah.
Both.
But he was wonderful. So he had written a book. But part of the reason we wanted to bring him to our event was... We like to think about trying to inspire clients in the enjoy segment. So, you know, whether they've got or taking up a new hobby, or so some clients were asking about, you know, if they wanted to get started, what type of cameras and different things. And he was just so engaging and fantastic to listen to. That again, it was another, that was the first event we'd hosted in our studio. So we can now do that ourselves in house. We had about 50 clients there. And what I also love is the interaction between clients. So obviously I get to meet them all, and you know there's certain hobbies that clients share, so actually to see them interact with each other, that you know they'll get on really well, or they share the same interests, it's really nice.
And some clients, you know, just won't come because it's not their thing, and that's fine, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to mingle with other people, but we do know there's a lot of people that have a similar sort of ethos and mindset, and it's quite interesting. So
how many clients do you guys have now, and is there sort of any upper limit that you wouldn't?
Yeah, well, we've got 380 individuals, so we class it as individuals. Some people count families, but you've still got to do the same paperwork for one person as you have.
Yeah,
to
understand
families,
their tax circumstances, their, you know, all the difference. Yeah.
Which is quite a lot. I mean, for a two advisor firm, it's quite a lot. But we have quite a well qualified team, and we are also trying to bring on a couple of advisors as well. So we feel that the right mix of good quality team is worthy of the clients, and using technology to help us.
Because service is really important to
absolutely,
us.
We're
really, that's you know, we're high touch. As I say, we're bespoke. We think, you know, it's something
we don't take on many clients. I mean, if we took on five new clients a year, that's, you know,
it's
that's about
work,
it. But you know, some people are taking on a lot of clients, but we don't. We kind of just stick, and we make sure we deliver a good service to those that we have.
And how did those clients sort of come into your orbit? Was it referrals? That sort of,
the majority have been existing client referrals.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
I suppose it comes from that sort of like family nature. Yep. I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think being sisters in business and that family dynamic, it's quite a lot of families actually we end up having. So one sibling will come to us, and then they'll refer to others, and so actually we do have a lot of family groups within our business.
And I suppose just moving on slightly, what's sort of your investment proposition for lots of your clients? What sort of funds are you guys looking at the moment, and what interests you?
Yeah, we have different propositions for the different segments. So the Dreamers are really focused on a kind of cost focus, because that's important to try and get performance but keep costs low. The Planners, it's much more of a kind of what we call the core operation, the core portfolios. So that's our different risk rated portfolios, also towards their goals. I mean, it depends what they are trying to do, because that drives everything that we do. And then we have an income strategy, obviously, for the enjoyers. So they're all different portfolios, different risks, and we can mix and blend the different portfolios depending on the clients. So it's it works quite well for us, and it's been a long time to try and devise something that's going to work. But it's... Yes.
And you mentioned Aspen earlier. That's your MPS provider. Yeah. What's? I mean, you guys are big fans of this. I understand. What sort of things have they brought to your business?
What benefits? Yeah. Well, I think what we liked initially was their. It's probably one of the most meaning risk profiles I've ever seen, because a lot of them are just not. It was more meaningful, and clients could understand it. Some of the,
multiple choice questions.
Psychometric testing. It's not ideal. But this was more meaningful, and the tech tool that they have that powers that is quite useful. That you can then pull it through to a report. And it's just it's obviously a complex strategy, but it's quite simple. So it's to explain it to clients, that understanding and that. That is important for us, and we felt that certainly the Aspen strategies have that.
And I think one of the reasons that we were looking to, I suppose, outsource that strategy was that it's become an awful lot more work for advisors to do all the research and also do the planning side properly. So when you're doing cash flow modelling and everything to try and focus on the client goals and the client's strategy, it's really difficult to do everything well. So although it's been an area of interest for us for many years, and we built our own portfolios for many years, we realised that you're going to have to pick and choose your path here and the way that the business is going to go forward. And COVID probably also brought that to the forefront, because there was such a dip in 2020. By having the cash flow model, by able to reassure them that they can still achieve their goals no matter what's going on in the investment world, because from about 2018 onwards, there's always been these epic events, that's been affecting markets. So it's all about reassuring the clients, because we are the rock that they look to make sure that, everything going forward is okay. So focusing on that side certainly meant that it's more value for the clients, it's more meaningful. And a lot of them, although maybe asked about investment, and a lot of them aren't that interested in the underlying strategy. All they want is that they can achieve what
straight
they want to
up.
Achieve.
Yeah, well,
minimum risk,
maximum return. Yeah.
You've got to explain it, but you've got to explain everything. And building knowledge over many years has meant we've got quite a well-educated, well-knowledgeable client bank as well. So there's a few that do have a very specific interest in investment as well. So
do you have quite a balance between those who are just sort of defer it to the planners and say, just make me as much money as you can, or those who are quite very hands-on?
Probably 5-10% are quite hands-on, are quite interested, certainly. Or the a big part of the meeting is on the investment part, but I would say the majority of clients, the biggest part of the meeting is about their circumstances. And actually, sometimes the investment conversation doesn't necessarily feature at certain parts.
But you've got to talk about, the changes in legislation, changes in tax, inheritance tax, or whatever's happened in budgets. You're talking about their circumstances, their changes that's happened to them. You're focusing on where their portfolio is. So by the time you get to that, there's only so much they can take in. So you've got to pick and choose the really relevant things. And I think that's what Nikki does really well in meetings.
And over the last few months, what has been the main thing? I mean, tariffs, budgets...
Yeah, there has been a few conversations, and a few people have looked at portfolios and gone, oh, but actually it's, again, we bring it back to, well, what's the objectives here? If we've already discussed any short-term spending that they have, so that's already in cash and accessible. Obviously there's the odd curveball that happens, and we deal with that, but the full financial planning side of things, these shocks and market corrections that happen and will continue to happen aren't so big a deal, really.
And Nikki undertook the certified financial planner qualification through lockdown. It was kind of, we're not the types of girls to sit and watch Netflix. We like to make the full use of our time. So as well as creating an office and building a studio and all the rest of the things that we were doing and changing different softwares, Nikki got the head down on that qualification and, you know, passed first time, which is quite an accolade. So, and just having that reassurance when you're a small business that you're doing things right was big. But it also had quite a big effect on how you spoke to clients.
Absolutely, and what you delivered and the strategy and repeatable process that you deliver for every client. And I think that's really, it was a really good qualification and process to do. Dare I say, I actually enjoyed it. I do love a case study, and it was a case study of all case studies.
Should have been a lawyer.
So I know, perhaps. Maybe that's what I'll do next in my retirement.
But we say we're quite lucky, but everything we've done has just kind of slotted into place at the right time. And so it's just, you know, enhanced our business over that period, which is, whether it's, I mean, vision, foresight, or luck, we don't know. But, you know, we certainly work very hard in everything we do. So they say the harder you work, the luckier you are. So
good way to finish, I think. Jenny and Michaela, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.